You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 26th, 2015. You're listening to episode 139 of this crazy, stupid show. We're having a good new year so far, laden heavily with more technical problems. We'll get into that in a moment. First of all, I'm Rob. That's Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hey.
We have a special guest on the line with us. We have the third host of the podcast, often absent. We have Mr. Andy Lennox. Hey.
Andy Lennox in the house. How's it going?
Good.
Woo!
Woo!
I wish you were actually in the house, but instead you're in a house in Flint.
Yeah.
Nowhere near us.
You sound really, like, crackly with your ghetto board game setup. Why don't you tell them what's going on?
You actually sound decent.
Like, okay, good.
I'm surprised.
It remains to be seen what the final recording quality is. But, for listeners, we'll put a picture of this up on the show notes for this. Andy is on Skype through Jason's iPhone 6 Plus. Which is propped up so that it can sit next to the microphone where Jason is also talking into. It is on top of the box of Scoville, which itself then is on top of the Camel Up box, so that the phone
is managing to crush all of them.
Yes. The phone's bigger than all of those things.
Right, because it's a giant phablet.
It's the best phone ever.
Yeah, it's the most ghetto thing, because we are cursed with audio problems and recording issues for eternity.
For eternity.
So that's cool.
Literally for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd think that after doing this for 3 years, we would have figured this crap out, but
we
no.
We keep going to better systems, and they keep not being
they
good
keep
enough.
Failing us.
Get it together, boys. Get it together.
We use a GarageBand, man. Come on.
Builders deserve better. We really do.
You're not going to get it, though. Deserve schmiserve.
Right. So how's it going, Andy? What's new?
Nothing much. Right now I'm watching Matt Loomis play Hearthstone. I should probably turn this off, but it's kind of fascinating.
Is he losing?
No.
Oh, no.
No, he's not losing. He's doing pretty good. He's pretty good at this game.
I think you should keep watching him and just don't talk about it unless he loses. And then be like, Matt just lost. And then we'll talk about that for a few minutes. And then we can move on.
He challenged me to a game the other day after like popping in on me and telling me all the horrible mistakes I was making. And he was right about all of them. But he popped in and challenged me to a game, and I just by sheer dumb luck, I won. And I have like vowed to never play against him again.
Yeah, perfect record,
just
man.
So I can flaunt my perfect record against Matt Loomis.
That's great. Go out on top.
Nice.
So mean.
He deserves it, and he knows it.
So I know how this show goes. So yeah. I'm gonna ask you guys what you've been playing.
Prototypes.
Yeah, hey, imagine that.
I'm playing Rob's new version of a game.
Yeah, my fighting game Prototype. We got another round of that in. I made some updates. Andy, you're probably familiar from the show of what I was working on with that, and you actually helped me with a lot of those ideas.
I'd be interested in running through it one of these nights. So.
Okay, yeah, I have the new print and play ready to go. I need to update the rules, but that should be out soon. Yeah, cool. So that the structure there, of course, is the new combo system, which based on what two cards are out on the table at the end of the round, paired with the combo card, has some special effect. And that worked pretty well enough that I think that's the second game I'm going to bring to Unpub with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also working on, I haven't updated this proto yet, but I'm making some revisions to Innkeepers, which the official announcement here on this show is that Innkeepers is now officially retitled Saloon Tycoon.
Saloon Tycoon!
Fantastic.
Of
it's
Doom.
Not Maroon Balloon Saloon Tycoon?
No, huh?
Of Doom?
Of Doom, right? No.
I told Rob he had me
Rob.
Until Of Doom.
Rob, please tell the story.
So Andy and I were talking on GChat because Jason said only the cool people talk on GChat. So we wanted to be cool.
I talked to Andy on GChat pretty much all day.
And I was thinking about name changes. And Andy, I wanted your opinion on that. The choices were Saloon Tycoon or Wild West Emporium, which I like too, but Saloon Tycoon is too good to pass up. And I think you said, Andy, that Jason probably likes it because it rhymes. And then we went a little farther and started adding on to that. And I think the first thing was that I think you added a Balloon Saloon Tycoon, and I went to Balloon Saloon Tycoon of Doom, and that that moved morphed into the Maroon Balloon Saloon Tycoon of Doom.
Well, I think you guys are
the best part is like is what I said. Go tell Jason and look at get a good look on the look on his face when you say that to him.
Yeah,
and see if he's just like completely ecstatic.
Right, and coincidentally, then he was walking over to my desk as we were saying that, and he came over with a work question, and I said, "Wait, okay, new name, the Maroon Balloon Saloon Tycoon of Doom," and his face kind of got bigger and bigger smile, and then as soon as I said of Doom, he went, "You're screwing with me, aren't you?"
Here's what I think. I think you guys are Maroon Balloon Saloon Tycoon of Doom buffoons.
Oh! Whoa!
Well,
Wild West Walmart actually has a more rhyming ring to it.
Yeah.
Wild West Wonderland.
Wild West Walmart?
Wild West Walmart. There's no licensing issues with that, right?
No.
You'll be fine.
Throw caution to the wind.
Right.
And then we also got to do a run through today of Ramblers.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Testing out the bar abilities. I haven't done a lot of testing with those yet. Those have mostly been on paper with just some quick run throughs before. So this was really the first really solid, like, where I was getting feedback from somebody from another designer on these other than on paper. And I was really happy with it. Mm-hmm. There's some tweaks that need to be made, but I think with a couple more play tests and a couple tweaks, I feel good going into Unpub. And you know, normally for Unpub, normally for like to bring a game to a convention, I'm not super concerned with exactly the state it's in, and that's simply because when you go to a convention, you're going to play the game what, like twice, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But like going to Unpub, I'm going to play this game like 30 times. So, like, you want to work out every kink you can, right? Because that way, when you're at Unpub, you're going to expose a bunch more, but you want to get rid of the low-hanging fruit ahead of time. At least that's kind of how I feel about it.
Which is our topic for the day.
Hey!
Yes, it is.
Low-hanging fruit.
So,
like raspberries.
As Andy says to me, like, he actually, I believe, said this with a straight face, "Hey, should I bring a topic, or do you guys have one you want to talk about?" And I was thinking, have you ever listened to the show ever? You come up with half the topics we talk about. Why would you being on the show be any different?
Polite. If you had an idea.
Yeah, we didn't.
Wait, but before we get into the topic, we need to know what Andy's been playing.
Oh, yeah. So I played Imperial Assault. Have you heard of this game?
I've heard of it.
No, I haven't.
It's pretty excellent. So it's a Star Wars game. It's sort of like if you've ever played Descent, it's sort of like Descent, where one player plays all the bad guys, and then all the other players play like one hero apiece.
Okay,
that sounds cool.
And it's like a campaign type game where you go from one mission to the next. But when you finish a mission, like if you fail it, you don't just start it over. It's like a choose your own adventure kind of thing. Like the first mission, you have to like, I don't want to spoil it because it's actually something that if you heard it, it would spoil it, but we failed, and one thing happened, and if we would have, like, succeeded, another thing would have happened.
Hmm.
And it was really cool, and, like, there's side missions that you can choose to go on. There's lots of expansions for it. It seems really cool. The gameplay is really slick and easy and fun. There's also, like, a skirmish mode, so you can, like, if you have a set, you can build, like, a team, and then two players can duke it out against each other.
Oh, cool.
It's really awesome. If you can find, it's like $100 though. But if you can find, yeah. But if you can, I've seen it in places for like $70.
Still,
definitely yeah. Worth picking up. Well, I mean, there is like a probably 4 to 5 inch tall AT-ST in the box, like model.
Okay, I'll buy it. I'm in.
It's high quality. It's Fantasy Flight.
It's Fantasy Flight. If you had said that, I'd have guessed how much it cost.
Yeah, they make good quality stuff,
they
though.
Do. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They just make a lot of it, so in a box.
And then played some Red 7. Have you played Red 7?
No.
I'll bring it to Unpub.
Cool.
That's cool. Lots of Eggs and Empires. If you guys haven't played that, you
got
to play it.
I got it in the mail. I heard it's great. Jonathan Liu, man, said Game of the Year. That was his choice.
I mean, it's up there. Like, I really think you could play this with anyone and they'd like it.
That's cool.
Like, literally any person.
Right. I mean, it's mostly, I think, based on everything I've heard, it's probably mostly Ben Pinchback. Matt Riddle probably didn't do anything.
Yeah,
because
Matt's a sucker.
Yeah.
He tends to be wrong about things on Twitter.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Just so you know.
So, anyway.
So that's what I've been playing.
Good times.
Good.
Awesome. So, Unpub. Yeah. So, the topic this week we're going to talk about is, Andy pointed out, you know, Rob hasn't been to Unpub, and Andy and I are such veterans of Unpub, the one we went to. But we learned a lot in Unpub. So, we're going to talk to Rob about what to expect and how he should be preparing and all the things he has not done yet that he should have done.
Yeah. Talk to me.
Don't feel bad. I haven't done them either, and I bet Andy hasn't either.
The clock is ticking.
Clock is really ticking.
Very close now. Very close.
It would be a shame if you were like barely working on a game you'd barely tested with someone else that you wanted to plan and have an Unpub.
Yeah, I mean...
Hey, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we certainly will. Okay, so first thing to... So it's Unpub. You get a table. So there's two ways to attend, right?
Just in case, you know, because this is a show, right? And we need to assume that there's somebody out there who's listening for the first time ever, right?
Oh, okay.
So let's introduce what Unpub is, where it is, all this stuff.
Okay, Unpub is the Unpublished Games Convention. It's taking place this year. It's the fifth one. It's taking place this year at the Baltimore Convention Center in Baltimore, Maryland. It's February 7th and 8th. and yeah, it's basically a game convention, but there's a big twist, and that is most of the games that you can go in and play are unpublished games.
Pretty much all the games should be unpublished. Some of them are signed but not published. Like, I'll have Ramblers there, which is signed but not published yet.
Yeah.
And there's lots of dark corners where people are playing actually published games as well. But
yeah.
That's not the focus.
Right.
The focus of this is the unpublished game.
Yeah, and so the idea is that it's, you know, in your average convention, the attendees pay a fee to get a badge and show up, and they can do all kinds of fun things and buy stuff. This is different because all the exhibitors, all the people that are basically providing events at the convention, they're all unpublished game designers. They've paid for tables so that the general public can come in. I don't recall this year. Is it free entry or is it cheap?
Yep. I think it's still free. Yeah, that's, is it free? That's good. Important to them. So
unlimited games, and there's hourly prizes. So the more games you play, the more entries you get into drawings.
Yeah,
and a lot of the prizes are games that have went through Unpub that have now published.
Right.
I've got, I think, 20 copies of Watermelon Washout that'll be in there as part of the giveaway, plus lots and lots of other games.
Yeah.
So
it's a very cool thing. It's a great thing for designers. It's a great thing for people who just enjoy playing games and like trying stuff. It's a great way for people to kind of also, you know, get out of their comfort zone, try new things that they wouldn't otherwise really have the opportunity or the desire to try. So it's just kind of a cool thing. It's a cool, unique, different experience for anybody who's in gaming. Even if you're listening to the show and you're not a designer, if you're in the area, you should check it out because it's a cool event.
You get to play all games all day for free. So.
For free.
Right. And you mean it's kind of like you're sometimes you're playing tomorrow's best games today, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're games that aren't out yet.
Right.
But you're playing them, and a lot of games get published because of Unpub.
Right.
And there's some real stinkers.
Yeah. I might be bringing a couple of those.
I might be bringing one of those.
Yeah. Part of that might be my fault.
We all might be bringing one of those.
No, but, you know, I mean, that's what's cool. I mean, last year I tried some games there, and some of the games I'm not working on anymore because of feedback I got there, and you know, I realized that they were not ready and should be maybe put on hold, or you know, and I think that happens with some people. I'm curious to know how many other designers, how prepared they are ahead of time. You know, like, I was encouraged because I was talking to someone, I think it was TC, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what I'm bringing. I've got some options, you know," and it made me feel good because, like.
Even TC wasn't sure yet.
Right, because I feel like other designers are like, I've got these four games I'm bringing. I've been working on them for 12 years. I know what I'm doing. And that's not the case. But I just always assume everyone else is way more prepared than Rob and I are. So
that's a pretty good assumption.
Yeah, generally.
Doesn't mean they're actually prepared, though.
Right. So, but our show is for designers. So if I being a designer, we want to talk today about what first-time exhibitors, first-time designers need to know coming to UMPUB. So,
First of all, you need a ticket, which were sold during a Kickstarter over the summer. So if you don't have one to exhibit...
Sorry about your luck.
I never actually got a ticket. I mean, I paid for the Kickstarter, but I didn't get a ticket.
You didn't get your ticket
in
the mail?
Was I supposed to get a ticket?
Uh-oh. No table for you.
Oh, no. Daryl, help.
Neither. I didn't get anything. I'm just assuming... I'm going to show up, and everything's going to be okay.
My name will be on a list.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Okay, so Friday, the day before the event proper, there tends to... So starting at 3 o'clock, there's a few events. So the first one is graphic design and prototyping by Daniel Solis. So that's going to be cool because he's awesome at that. There's a panel discussion. There's a Q&A at 5:45 with Richard Lanius. If you're familiar with like Arkham Horror, Run, Fight, or Die, he's Defenders of the Realm. He's got tons of games out.
He's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And you can ask him some questions and stuff. And then at 8 o'clock p.m., there's the designer dinner. So my first tip is get there early and do all the things.
Yeah.
The designer dinner was like... Last year it was really cool. It was fun to just see a lot of people that, you know, that you maybe haven't caught up with since other cons. And like,
yep.
And I knew a lot fewer people than either of the people I went with, Jason Slingerland and Jason Katarski.
Right.
But I was introduced to lots of people. I met a lot of people. I became friends with a lot of people, and it was a really cool experience. So if you're not planning on going to that, you're a fool.
Well, and I knew a lot of people there, but I know a lot more people that would be there this year because of last year at UMPUB. You know, like I got to know Tagmire a lot better at UMPUB last year, and like Kevin Culp. I mean, those were just guys I had heard of, and you know, so I mean, I got to talk to them more, and you know, so that's cool. I do feel like you meet a lot of people there for sure.
Yeah,
if you're open to that.
Yeah. So the next day is playtesting, like from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. And you will have a table from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and you will be showing off a game. Designers out there, if you haven't been to UMPUB, like how many times realistically have you played your game with like a full complement of like ideal number of players like since you've created it? Like my guess is it's under 10. Right.
Yeah, you're probably right. Even with Saloon Tycoon that I've played, I mean, I've been working on this since last spring, and maybe 10 or 11 times that I've played a full game with four people who were engaged and interested in it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. Think of where that game started and where it is now.
Yeah.
How far it can come in that time.
Yeah.
Imagine doing that in 2 days.
In 2 days, yeah.
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 Makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So, like Jason said earlier, like you need to take care of that low hanging fruit early, or else, like if you don't at least play, you have to at least play your game, I'd say, 5 full times, before you put it in front of.
Just looked scared.
Well, because I mean, like I have a game that I'm bringing that I'm actually going to register that I will have played maybe once, so. But I mean, it is what it is. You know, I may end up playing the game twice and throwing it away.
Okay. So that said, you are going to miss stuff. You're going to miss like rules clarifications. You're going to miss like things that you took for granted that seem easy that you could simplify on the spot. You're gonna want to change things on the fly. So there's some other things you're going to need to bring to make sure that everything goes smoothly. You're going to play test the game first thing in the morning, and you're going to find stuff immediately.
Like, wow, that's a problem. Yeah. So here's a big suggestion I have that I did last year, and some other designers didn't think of this, and I was surprised. So like last year I was working with Transylvania Trading Company, and a lot of the thing about that game is kind of the averages of cards, like what are the average number of cards in each thing. So I actually printed a bunch extra. And didn't even cut them out. I just kept them in flat paper in my bag, so they didn't take up any space. that allowed me to change out the probabilities on the game on the fly. In addition to that, I brought some blank cards that had like this, they had the nice background on it, but that I could just write on to tweak things. You know, and that, one thing I did, so here's a, like, I will be doing this with Ramblers, even though I'm confident that I need 60 whiskey tokens, I'm going to bring 100 because Transylvania Trading Company, I did the math and I was confident how much money I needed. And the first game I ran out, the first game, and I'd play tested that before and it was always enough.
But, you know, you did the math, so it's probably okay.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, like, that's sometimes the best we can do, right? Until you get enough testing in, and then you're like, oh, crap. So,
oh, yeah, you'll find that anomaly. Like, all of the anomalies will happen at once.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like with Gunslinging and Ramblers, one of the things we worked on back and forth was how much money does everybody have to have? And we tried to figure out, like, back and forth, like, okay, this much money means that 75% of the time you will make it to the end of the game. This means 90% of the time you will. And finally, I just got tired of it and said, AJ, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you exactly enough money to not get lose the game based on, so you don't ever run out of money until the last turn. Because it's okay. Because then there's no player elimination, right? And like, so those are the type of things you have to, you know what I mean? You want to think about those things because those are the type of things that will come up when you're just powering through so much testing at Unpub.
The other thing is Daniel Solis clued me in on this. There's like these whiteout strips. So if you print out like nicer cards that you can't just, if you don't print extra cards or you just want to tweak one value and you don't want to like go back to the Kinko's and have stuff printed, they make whiteout strips that are just basically stickers you can put on your paper and you can pencil in values on cards.
That's good too.
Sure.
So I'm bringing like most of my prototyping supplies, as far as like paper and cutters and like printed cards, and extra tokens and things.
You bring some scissors, okay?
Yeah.
Bring some scissors.
Because we're flying, so we can't bring any blades with us.
Oh, that's right. We're driving. I'm going to bring all kinds of blades.
You do that.
You're going to bring just like a whole case of blades,
I'm going to mail you some blades to bring, okay? Some swords and stuff. So some other suggestions to think about. One is when you see the playtester walk up to your booth and they say, hey, what games do you have, right? Because some playtesters are going to walk up and say, hey, I hear you have Ramblers here. I want to try that. Or I hear you have this or that, you know. But a lot of times they just walk up and say, what you got, you know. So I always had both my games set out because you got a decently long table. But I had them set out to where I could tear one down really fast. That way, when they walked up, I could explain both games to them. And you may really want to try Innkeepers, but Saloon Tycoon. But the person who comes up may very well be better to try your fighting game. So you just want to be in tune to that to make sure that, you know, because you can kind of tell when somebody walks up what type of game you think they're going to be into. At least, I don't know, I felt good about that. Like, I felt like I judged pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, so
I'm going off of that too. Like, you don't want to stand there or sit at your table twiddling your thumbs while people walk by.
Right.
Yeah.
I am going to have a prototype there, and it's not going to be beautiful and flashy. So to get people to play it, you're going to need to stand up. You need to, like, approach people, talk to people about what your game is. And it's also a really great time to, like, hone your pitch and hone how you teach the game. Like, we brought Jason Katarski and I brought what is now called Camp Khaki there last year. And I got so good at teaching that game. Like, I could have people playing by themselves without me helping in like 5 minutes, and it's not like it's not a super hard, like, it's a little bit of, there's a little bit of meat to that game. It's not like just a simple card game. So you're gonna hone your pitch, but you might want to do that a little bit before you get there, because you're gonna want to be proactive and bring people in,
right?
And get
them to play. And this is a little late for any listeners out there probably, but, you know, something Andy and I are going to talk about a game we're working on together at the end, later in the show, for the pitch. And one of the things we decided to do was we had four pieces of artwork done, or they're having this. They're not done yet. Theoretically, actually, by the time the show publishes,
as of this recording, they're not done.
They should be done. We did that because if I can print out some pages on some cardstock and we can stand those up at the table.
Yeah.
As you're walking past, you're going to be like, WTF is that? And then you might stop and say, what is this about? And then that's your intro to pitch, you know? So, doing something that gets people's attention is a good idea. Ben Rossett is good at that.
Yeah.
He's had like, I think he got like something kicked out of one thing though.
He had a big rocket for, Mars Needs Mechanics. Yeah.
But then he had like a big,
didn't he make that, big Euro game based on that tiny little card game that came out before it?
I don't know.
You mean Brew Crafters? That was a joke, right? It wasn't. Yeah. But he had like a...
It was a great joke because we didn't get it.
I understood what he meant. It just wasn't funny. So, anyways, yeah. I mean, doing something that will get people's attention is not necessarily a bad thing. You don't have to have a flashy prototype. You just have to have a way to get people's attention. And maybe you can just be obnoxious and stand up and talk to everybody. I don't like doing that. So I would rather have something that just gets people's attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the other thing is too, and I did this last year, I'm doing it again this year, is bring one game that you want to work on and one game you want to sell.
Yeah.
What if you're only bringing one game?
Don't just bring one.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
That's the implied,
so here,
fall out of that.
Here's a question then.
Yeah.
I've got two games that I want to sell and one that I want to work on.
Which one do you want to work on?
I want to work on that fighting game.
Which two do you want to sell?
I want to sell Saloon Tycoon and Tea Party, Epic Monster Tea Party.
Oh, nobody's going to buy those.
I love you, man. I love you so much.
That's okay to have multiple games you want to sell. You just are going to have to focus on one. Like, at Unpub... I mean, if you get a chance to pitch to someone, either Saloon Tycoon or Monster Tea Party are great ones to pitch. But, like, Monster Tea Party does not need playtesting.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So, but there's nothing wrong with having it there and trying to sell it. But, Andy, so here's a situation, like, we're in. I mean, you've got Zushido coming with you, right?
Yep.
Is that the game you want to sell?
Yes.
Okay.
So
there's nothing else
I want to do with this game. It's solid. It's tight. If there's anything that's going to change, it's going to be like
minimal.
Somebody's preference to go one way or the other. So it's ready. I will play it with anybody who wants to. I'm going to set it up. I ordered some cards, like some nicely printed cards from Printer Studio with the linen finish. They're going to be all sexy looking.
Wow.
So that's going to be my one game that's like, if I want to, you know, if this other game that we're bringing that isn't working out, I can always show this game that's pretty solid.
Right.
And I know if somebody wants to see like a little card game. Also, make your two games that you bring like different.
Yes. Don't bring two games that are like medieval games about the same thing. Make them, you know, so the one game Andy and I are bringing together is different from everything. And then I've got Ramblers, which I'm not trying to sell. I'm just trying to practice, obviously. If I was trying to sell it, AJ might be a little pissed.
Yeah.
Sorry, AJ. I got a better deal.
I will give you $5,000 to not publish this game.
Honestly, that would probably be a pretty good deal for most game designers.
Yeah, and for AJ.
Well, if they gave... I thought they were giving the money to me.
Oh,
but that wouldn't work because
wouldn't work
AJ
he already owns
like,
it. Yeah.
Dude, I own the game.
Yeah.
Totally random idea related to Ramblers. Stretch goal, drinking game for Ramblers.
I don't know if AJ would be behind that or not.
Oh, so. I will make one and put it on.
I'm already like hammering him with stretch goal ideas. I'm like, do this, do this, do that.
You have to have a drinking game. There has to be one.
I feel like encouraging people to drink in that game would get people to pass out and die because there's so much drinking in that game. But anyways, and then my other game, Outcome the Wolves, obviously is a lot different than the other two. And that's, you know, the point. But so, Andy, I just want to be clear, dude. When somebody says, I have to have this game of ours, you're not going to tell them, no, we're just here to work on it. Okay.
No,
you're like, dude, I'm sorry, this was my game to work on.
Obviously, but
I mean, because that's probably gonna happen, so just based on the artwork, they're gonna be like, I don't even care what this game, how it plays, I need more of these artwork.
Yeah, and you're bringing it to work on it, so like,
right,
all when you're working on your game, whatever you use to work on your game, bring all the stuff that you will need to work on.
Yes, very important. I mean, you know, and the other thing, and on the note that we were just saying jokingly, but be flexible. Be flexible with your game. And you, the feedback you get at Unpub, you really have to be nice to those people that are giving you feedback. A lot of times they're not game designers.
Mm-hmm.
They're just casual game players. But their opinions still matter very much. But your feedback may be different than you might get from a group of designers. Now, the cool thing is at night, a lot of the designers play games together too. Which means you get to get that harder, meaner designer feedback,
right?
That really helps too. So I think it's a good balance of both. We had great playtesters, you know, and some playtesters were like, some of my games, like the one guy was like mad. Like he was like, this game should be better. Like, I like this game, but this game should be better. And I'm invested in this game. And I mean, it was really a compliment, right? Because the guy like really wanted the game to be what he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
He was wrong. I mean, and I can say that because it was Ramblers and what he wanted me to change in it was bad. I think he really was fighting me for betting, putting betting back in the game. And
oh.
There's been like three iterations with that. And every single one of them have been worse than the last. And
yeah.
That's why we got rid of betting. So anyways, but you want to be respectful, of course, of your people, and you want to make sure you're telling people to go fill out those forms.
Yeah.
Because you want the feedback and you want it in writing. It's nice to have it that way because they're super honest when they fill those forms out.
Mm-hmm.
So
they'll never see you again. So
yeah.
They,
yeah. So who cares?
Yeah. Well, and even if they will, that you don't necessarily know what their name is.
Oh yeah.
You know? So that's, we had any final notes we want to throw on this, Andy, because we should probably move on here.
Yeah. No, I think.
Rob, do you have any questions for us?
Any questions?
I don't know. I guess you guys said last year you actually had the opportunity to not just play games with publishers, but specifically to sit down and do like a short pitch to a panel or something. Do we know if that's happening again this year?
Last year, Game Salute did like 10-minute pitches with basically every single person who was there. Right.
Yeah.
And here, here's the thing.
I don't know if that what panned out with that.
They signed a few games while they were there.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't think those games are out yet or on Kickstarter yet, but I mean, they have so many games, you know, in their lines that I don't know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Even if you don't think they're the right company for you, sign up for a pitch. Pitch a game to them.
Mm-hmm.
If they say they want your game and you don't think that's the right fit, tell them no. But sign up for the pitch. I did two last year. And it was terrifying and nerve-wracking because they actually time you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, you have 5 minutes to your pitch, or maybe even 3 minutes to your pitch. And then the rest of the time was them spent talking. And, like, literally, Dan Yarrington had an iPad with a timer on it.
Yeah.
And he started it, and you could look at the timer as you were going.
Yeah, they did that for the tabletop deathmatch pitch that I did.
Okay. And yeah. That's great. Like, it's really good practice. So I certainly, if they're there again, I'll sign up for it again.
Yeah.
Just because I really think it is, I think it's good practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's important. Other publishers there, the publishers will just be walking around trying games too, you know, and don't be afraid to tell them to sit down and try your game. Yeah. I mean,
and you know, that's another thing is I don't know faces. I'm terrible with faces. So I'm not going to recognize anybody.
Hopefully you're near Andy and I.
Yeah.
Because I honestly didn't know a lot of those people last year, the publishers.
Yeah.
And Katarsky is really good at that. So, because he knows everybody.
Yeah.
Because he's a schmoozer.
Right.
So, I'm not wrong.
No.
So, like, he would always point out to me, oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, that's so-and-so. And so, I try to remember those faces.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool.
And, yeah, so.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm excited.
And make sure to play other designers' games because
I really want to do that
because you got to steal ideas from somewhere. Yeah. So
by day two, you'll be sick of your own game.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that honestly, that is the biggest reason to bring more than one game.
Yeah,
is by day two you're going to want to set your game on fire, even if it's going really well.
Yeah.
You're still going to be tired of trying it. You know. So, yeah.
When was the last time you played the same game for like 12 hours in a row?
Right. Or even better. Watched someone play the same game for 12 hours in a row and then tell you why they don't like it.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this again?
Basically, Rob, here's the worst case scenario. You sit there, people try your game, and then they tell you it sucks for 12 hours. So, honestly, that's not. The worst thing is sitting there with no one playing your game for 12 hours. So, yeah. But luckily, those people came to play. and we all have pretty, you know, we have shorter games to let people play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that is, you know, and don't feel like too, like if somebody says you've got a 30-minute game, they're like, I got 15 minutes. Be like, hey, you want to just give it a try? We can call mm-hmm. it quits as soon as you have to go. I had somebody say, I got 10 minutes. I said, that's cool. I'll show you how it works. He sat there for 45 minutes, played the whole game, and gave me 10 minutes of feedback because
sure, that's cool.
He liked the game. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. All right. So,
time to practice the pitch.
So Andy, let me start on this real quick.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I'll let you do a lot of the pitching since you're the guest. And, so here's,
tell the story.
So let me tell the story. So I came up with the Formula D hater game because I hate Formula D because it's a sucky game. And I can say that because it's 2015. So,
this started on the podcast.
Yes, on the podcast. Yeah, right. Yeah. Somebody challenged me to design a game. Challenged us to design a game based on a game we don't like. Was it or something?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I don't recall who challenged us for that one.
I was like, that's super easy. Formula D. So I pitched a game. I pitched a game about racing on a farm in a fantasy setting with really ridiculous things like halflings wearing hens as roller skates and stuff like that. And then I just kind of
off the top of your head.
Yeah. And I just kind of threw it away. Like it was a funny thing, but then listeners kept being like, dude, you should make that game. Like I love that theme. And I mean, I'm really gullible. So I was like, okay, sure. Why not? I was peer pressure. So I start trying to work on the game and then I start talking to Andy about it on GChat. Cause that's what I do. And Andy does what he does, which when he likes an idea and he just says, I'm going to design this game with you. I mean, you can't lie. That is pretty much how it happens. You're like, I've always wanted to design a game like this.
Designer tip number one, to find a co-designer, you just be really pushy. Right.
Yeah. But you do that because you feel comfortable that I would have told you if I didn't want that. But
yes.
I was actually wanting to get this ready for Unpub and knowing it would be hard to do on my own. And I was kind of stuck with some of my mechanical ideas. And you basically were like, I was like, I've got this idea for this stuff. And you're like, dude, that's a roll and move game. It's going to suck. Let me help you. and you said, I've got this weird mechanic that I designed for an RPG that I think I could turn into a driving mechanic. And I was skeptical, but I said, oh, but you had like a chart. So I believed you because you sent me a picture.
Man,
and
a chart.
Whoa.
He's legit.
Wow. Charts are amazing.
I mean, seriously, you showed me a chart and I was like, I think he's got this. I was like, there's circles on it with numbers in it. And I put cubes on these. This is great.
Wait. Was it a Venn diagram?
It was not.
Oh.
If it had been, Andy would have just stolen the game from me. And it wouldn't matter.
We're scrapping it and starting over. So,
no. Too late for that. So
I've already done that like 3 times.
I know. So I want to talk a little bit towards the end about co-designing with someone and what I've learned from this. Things I haven't mentioned to Andy yet. So... that'll be fun. But so right now we kind of divided the labor because of the shortness of time and not wanting to butt heads too much. So actually, I'm just going to talk about this right now real quick because it makes sense. So Andy and I have worked on some other stuff together and we've just butt heads a lot, right? Until finally I realized like, you know, Andy, one of your strongest suits is coming up with a really solid core mechanic that's kind of different and is unique. And you do best with that, I think, when you're just kind of left to your own devices and you can kind of come to me and say, here's what I'm thinking, and I can throw ideas back at you. So that's kind of what we did with this. We went back and forth a few times, set up some ideas, and then you said, I'm going to work on this way. And I just said, okay, tell me what else I can do to help to keep us going. And so you've been like, oh, what do you think about this? Or can you design this? Or, you know, and that's been great. So I really think if you're co-designing with someone, find each other's strong suits, you know, and work to those and understand that early in the design process, butting heads will just make the game not happen. You're really better off just letting each person work on something different. And then also have a ridiculous deadline that forces you to focus on it. Cause yeah. That's helpful too.
I have been playing with this thing like every night, put the kids to bed and I get out the paper and the cubes. I start.
Nice.
Pushing cubes and cutting cards and it's crazy.
So, all right. So now I'm going to let Andy pitch the game as it is now. It's certainly not done yet, but it's.
Why don't you start with the theme? So kind of
right. So
start with
okay.
The creative that because that's sort of what you've been working on. I have not even thought about this part of it that much at all.
Right.
Other than like this is. you know, this is the general direction of what we're trying to emulate here.
Right, right, right. So
Jason, that's been his, like, the bigger of the contributions while I'm sort of still working around with the core system.
Right.
So tell them about the theme.
So the theme is it's a fantasy world, and it started as being on a farm. It still has some of that aspect, but Andy came up with the idea of, well, together we talked about wanting a track that was changeable because we agreed that one board would be just boring after
a
while.
Yeah.
And we went back and forth about how to do that, and Andy finally was like, look, you can do it with hexes. So we started using hex tiles for that. And so I was trying to think about the idea for the racers. We wanted every racer to be unique, to have slightly different abilities, and also abilities that really tied in with their art. And we decided early on that we would only do four of these characters for Unpup out of the eight that will be in the full game, because we didn't want to make it too difficult and fail.
Yeah.
So theme-wise, we wanted to have the ability to swap out things that still felt with the swap out track, right? These hexes that still felt within the theme. So one of the things I worked on was we've got kind of the base way that a track works, but I started working on specialty tiles that really enhance the theme. And, you know, the theme is you're these fantasy people racing, and you're riding ridiculous animals.
Over the characters, because that's the best.
Right. Yeah, so the four characters we're starting with are the halfling hen skater, which is, as we described, it's a female halfling skating on some hens.
Like, she literally has chickens tied to her feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chickens tied to her feet. It's awesome. There is the goblin goat sled, which is a goblin, with four goats, like a dog sled, little miniature gray goats pulling him around. And so he does things like makes wide turns and stuff like that because, you know, that's what you do on a dog sled / goat sled. I wanted to have some sort of human wizard, and Andy came through with a great, great idea. Which was to have the human wizard be riding an invisible horse. And we talked about it and agreed it would be funnier even if the wizard is riding an invisible, quote, dragon, but it's really just a horse. Like, so he has no flying abilities. He can do nothing that allows him to fly.
Why does your dragon always fly so close to the ground?
Right. Yeah. So anyways, that was kind of a fun thing. And the last one we're going to do for the for Unpub is a mermaid who's riding in a giant bullfrog's mouth that's full of water. And she's got like a wand and she can do stuff. And the other ones real quick that we came up with, a couple other ones that I were. There's an elf who's like on a platform that's being carried by birds.
Hmm.
So like he's the flying guy. Mm-hmm. So that will afford him some different things to, you know, miss bumpy track and stuff, but give him some hindrances in some other places. And then the other one I really like is the gnome in the kangaroo pouch.
so I think I missed this one.
Did you? It's like one of my favorites, like the gnome and a kangaroo pouch.
They need to both be wearing boxing gloves.
That's not a bad idea.
That's a great idea.
I was even thinking too, to have it be like a gnome tinkerer. So like, it's like, got some like mechanical stuff going on too, just randomly. Like maybe the kangaroo has goggles on.
Just the like, other one that I like was the donkey.
Yeah, so the donkey is two dwarves carrying a donkey that's dressed like a dwarven princess. So like on one of those like skiffs you would carry like a queen or something on.
Yeah.
So the dwarves are actually doing the running.
Helen Quinn.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, wow. 2 points, man. That was good.
Pull. Yeah.
And then there's one more that I can't remember off the top of my head. The orc riding a large pink pig. So like a pretty little pink pig, and there's a big orc riding.
Big ugly
it.
Orc.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. But yeah, we're just gonna do the core four to start with. Because though we basically picked some of the silliest ones we could that would be different enough from each other to make people be like, WTF is happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay, so that's that. That's kind of right. That side. So yeah. So Andy, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the system, so it's been through like kind of three major revisions so far. The first one, like you said, I sort of based on this idea for like a RPG that I had where you get so much power per turn, and it's a standard amount of power, and you allocate that power how you want to. So you can put it toward your acceleration, which would give you like movement points every turn. The power like increases and it stays on the board for the most point. Everybody has a player board that they're putting this stuff on. So you generate your power, you place it where you want to. You place like power in your steering, and then there's special abilities you can place it on, and it builds up over time. There's certain spaces that like you can place power there, and it just stays there. That's fine. There's certain places where if you place it, but at the end of the turn, you have to clear it. And it was all very deterministic, which I sort of liked things about it. But the problem was that you could sit there and calculate exactly how far you were going to go and exactly how, you know, what you needed to do. And some of that was going to be handled by players kind of selecting how they wanted to move at the same time and then revealing and then resolving things. But it just turned out that driving your car down the track was just too thinky, which was
like AP trying to drive a car.
Yeah. Exactly. So then I was like, all right, so instead of like you get power and you allocate it to get these static values of movement, how about you allocate it and that allows you to build a dice pool? So I did that, and it seemed pretty cool, and the dice rolls were a little bit more exciting. And so the system uses custom dice, and I'll get to how those work in a second, but you would allocate your power, and I played with it a little while and noticed that like there was never a meaningful choice between like I want to take power away from like my speed and put it into my handling, or like it was always just go full blast all the time. It was kind of killing decisions, and it wasn't super interesting. So I kept the dice mechanic. And then now the final system is this. Okay. So on your turn, there's three dice. There's handling, basic, and speed. They're custom dice. The handling dice have a lot of like turn symbols on them, and so there's four different symbols that you can roll. There's turn, speed, power, and then on a different die, the wipeout die, there's wipeout symbols. Power, so before I said you would allocate so much power per turn, now it's done by your dice rolls. So the power you have next turn is the power you roll this turn.
Okay.
The speed that you roll, you mark how much speed you go on a track that's marked from 1 to 6. So however many symbols, like it's a lightning bolt, however many lightning bolt symbols you have from your roll, you mark that on a track from 0 to 6. So if I rolled 3, I move a cube up to 3. That's how many I moved this round. And then when you roll speed, you have to move that many spaces on your turn. So if I roll 3 speed, I have to move 3 spaces. The speed track, however, is split up into 3 sections. 0, 1, and 2 give you a momentum of 1 lightning bolt. 3, 4, and 5 give you a momentum of 2 lightning bolts, and 6 plus gives you a momentum of 3 lightning bolts. So what that means is, on your next roll, whenever you roll the dice, you add whatever your speed was last turn, gives you more speed this turn, up to 3 extra. So there's a little bit of momentum in the game that you have to play with. You can go really fast and maybe ride the momentum out through a bank of curves, or you can just gun it and try and get really high values and go really far really fast. So that's basically how movement works. The distributions on these dice are pretty flat. Like on the speed die, you're going to get between 0 and 3 speed. It's always between 0 and 3. So the turning die, you're going to get between 0 and 3 turning. And then there's like other symbols sprinkled in amongst those, power and turning. Like there's one dud side of the speed die, but it's still like 2 power and 1 turning. You don't get any speed, but you get some
and
extra other
things. To clarify for the listeners, Andy, how many of each custom dice are there in the game?
In the game total, that's not totally decided yet, but it looks like there's going to be probably four normal dice, which are black and have mostly power on them, but other things. Looks like there's going to be two yellow, two green, and two red.
Okay. And on your turn, you could roll up to all of those?
Or? The red are wipeout dice. So, yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay, just clarifying to make sure people are keeping up.
So the base die roll is you roll one of each of the non-wipeout dice, a green, a black, and a yellow. You mark what your speed is, and you also mark how much turning you have. So every character's turning is going to be different, but basically you move your turning points up to keep track of how many you have for that turn. And then you move your guy that many spaces, and a lot of spaces will have either a turn left or a turn right on them. Whenever you pass over one, you just spend one turning, you spend one of your handling, and you keep going. If ever you can't pay for a move, you roll a wipeout die. We'll get to what that does in a minute. There's a little bit of strategy too, because you can prepare for a turn by paying two at any time, like before your turn. So I can pay two to like prepare to turn right, and that will give a bonus to my turn roll on my next turn. But if I ever have to turn the opposite direction, it's just an automatic fail. So you just wipe out. So you can get extra turning by like really leaning into it. But if you have to like quickly turn back the other direction, you're probably going to wipe out.
Which is realistic. So
yeah. So that's the basic like movement system. You roll three dice and you figure out what happens. But then there's power. So what you can do with power is on your character sheet, there's a few like basic abilities. There's reflexes, which lets you reroll any one die. So you spend a die for a reroll. There's adjust, which lets you swap one die type in your pool with another die type. So if you really like want to gun it, you can spend two and swap out your turning die for another speed die. You can boost for three, which just lets you add a die. So that's, you can tweak your dice roll as you're rolling by spending power. Then while you're moving, there's other actions you can do. One of them is breaks, so you can spend one power to reduce your total movement by two. So you can prevent wipeouts by slamming on the brakes with some of your power that you've allocated. And then by spending two, you can prevent one damage. So damage comes from whenever I've mentioned a few times that you're going to wipe out. When you wipe out, you roll, depending on how bad it is, you roll a wipeout die that has between one and three pips on it. And that does that much damage to you. So as you take damage throughout the game, and this isn't totally locked down yet, as you take damage throughout the game, you're going to like lose abilities. The maximum amount of turning you can use in a turn is going to go down. I have a few other ideas, but and then there's probably going to be pit stops so that you can fix it. But so that's the nuts and bolts of it.
And our next steps, kind of right now, like you said, you're working on that. I'm working on getting us a one base board, like with hexes, with a few things we could swap out. That way, of course, on the fly, we want to be able to swap out pieces. We're going to swap out hex pieces to change the track up for two reasons. One, in case it's not working, for two, so we don't go crazy doing the same track the entire time. And we'll have some extra specialty tiles, things like Rickety Bridge, where if too many players are on any portion of the bridge at once, the last player wipes out. Or there's one that's got a catch-up mechanic built in where if you... the last person, it's a catapult, and the last person to cross the catapult gets thrown forward three hexes. Or right now that's what it is. I mean, that might change, but you know, so that's just an easy catch up mechanic for maybe you're in second to last place and you're like, screw it. I want to be in last because I want to get that bonus and get way ahead. So that allows for some like stalling tactics to try and hold yourself back so that you can get a lead, which is kind of cool, I think. And just some things, there's like a secret passage that can allow you to go from one part of the board to another. Kind of like there were in some of the Mario Kart levels. Mm-hmm. And then like certain just other ones are just ones that kind of break the rules from the normal thing. Like normally there's three lanes on the board at any time, and some only have two and they're split. So, you know, you get pushed apart from one another, and just those type of things to try and make the game interesting. And players will be able to, I guess, ideally, Andy and I figured that most of the tiles on one side would have a normal track and on the other side would have some sort of wonky special tile. And it would be up to the players to say, which ones do I want to use? You know, and there could even be mechanics for swapping those out mid-game to make the track change, because it's a magical land. So, you know, totally. Actually, wow, I mean, that could be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, write that down.
Flip a tile over. Hey, good news, we're recording it.
Yeah. The other thing that I didn't mention is that those are just the very basic mechanics for how movements and some of your actions are going to work. A lot of the characters are going to have, like, I want them to have kind of a lot of really unique options they can use.
Yeah.
And then I want, like, a lot, I'm getting a lot of inspiration from Mario Kart, if you can't tell. But
and we don't feel bad about that.
I want weapons on the track to be, I want there to be pickups on the track that you can use. I want them to be, like, that's going to be basically the catch-up mechanic where whoever's in last place gets best pick.
Yep.
So I think between all those things, I'm liking how the core system is working so far. It's pretty simple. I need to get, like, I've just been playing by myself, going back and forth between, like, two different racers. I want to try, like, I have a game night coming up pretty soon. I'm going to try like four players on a very basic, like truncated version, just to see, see if it's fun.
Yeah. Rob and I are hoping to try it later this week. Once I get the simple board worked out. So
did you make the dice yet?
Not yet. So,
oh man, it took me forever.
I'll probably just, because Rob is nice about dealing with it, I'll probably just use D6s of different colors and then just make a chart to make it faster to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You know, and one of the things I'm super excited about is what you just mentioned, the unique abilities. Everybody who listens to the show knows I love variable player powers, and one of my strong suits is coming up with those. So that's something where I'm excited to be able to dive back in, you know, attaching to these core rules, lot of unique abilities, you know.
And I'm not comfortable, like, going into that phase of design until it's fun.
Like, absolutely.
If the vanilla version of it's fun.
Right.
Then you know that once you start adding,
right? Of course, yeah. Once the core is workable and enjoyable, adding crazy stuff will just make it more fun, you know. And obviously, balancing will be a huge thing, and that's one of the reasons why we're sticking to four players to start with, two four characters, because, you know, starting out with eight different characters could really mean it's impossible to balance for a while. Yeah. So,
another thing I was thinking about that I wanted to mention to you too is I really love. When you're playing Mario Kart, the track just gets really crowded in places. And I think it would be cool if there was, like, dummy racers or some way of controlling another racer, but very simply, like, they just kind of move a few spaces and get in people's way, and they don't really, you know, they can maybe fight, be a target for your special abilities or something, but they don't win you the game. Right. They just are, like, they're your team members or something.
Right.
I think that might add a little bit.
Right.
If the game ends up being like, hey, we're racing and we're not doing enough, like, kicking each other's butts.
Right. You know? And another way to solve that too would be in a two-player game, each person pilots, you know, two carts. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So,
well, when you're using Mario Kart as a reference or as an inspiration, it's important to remember that one of the things that keeps Mario Kart fun is the rubber banding of it, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so those games are only fun when you're in the thick of it with all the other players.
Right.
You know, as soon as you pull ahead and get way ahead of everybody and no one could possibly catch up with you, the game's not fun anymore. It's just, you're just going through the motions until the race is over.
You're clearly not playing to win, Rob. I think that's super fun. But in a board game like this, absolutely, everybody needs to be stuck together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's a lot of the design, like, inspiration for me is I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart, and I just notice how, like, elegant the design is as far as the rubber banding thing. Like, a lot of people complain about it, but
it's what keeps it fun.
Right. And the fact is,
there's a lot of subtlety to it though, because when you're in first place in Mario Kart 8, all you get are coins. banana peels and green shells. And everyone's like, well, these are the crappiest ones.
Yeah.
But banana peels and green shells let you like hang them out behind you as a, right. as a protection mechanism.
Right.
Coins let you, the more coins you have when you wipe out, like the better, the quicker you accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
So the strategy for being in first, and then you have to drive perfectly when you're in first because everybody is going faster than you unless right. unless you're getting every single power slide.
Yeah.
So when the strategy when you get in first becomes different, and I really want this game to be like that. Like mm-hmm. when you're in first, it's a strategy of playing defensively and not messing up anything.
Right.
And when you're in the back, it's just
run and gun.
Don't fall. Run and gun. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I want that feel out of this game. So
yeah, and then you want to make sure then, and I think this is with your theme. It's probably not going to be an issue, but then you want to make sure that you present it then as a silly racing game, not a serious racing sim, you know?
Oh,
right.
Yeah. So then that presentation is going to be a really, really important.
Oh yeah.
So people know what to expect from this and they don't get the wrong expectation that it's right. a serious racing game. So,
right. Well, yeah. if they look at the artwork, yeah. they won't think
right.
that.
Yeah. So now I have a bajillion questions, but we're really running low on time here. So I think we got to wrap it up. Hopefully I'll be able to play it at Unpub and I'll get yeah. a lot of my questions answered and we can talk about this again, I guess after Unpub, after we've all learned a lot.
Right. Well, we're going to have the portable recorded on Pub.
Yeah, we sure are.
So I'm sure Andy will sit down after the first day and talk about the game and how all of our games are doing.
Flaming disaster it was.
Right.
Yeah.
That's okay, though. That's okay. So,
exactly.
I mean,
failure is always an option.
It is. And it's an option we take a lot. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But, okay. But Andy, thank you for coming on and thank
yeah,
you for working on this game with me. I mean, it's super fun to work on something like this with someone else because, I mean, I know in the end it's going to be a better game for two of us doing it together, you know? So,
yeah, like you're contributing a lot of things that I wouldn't think of, and
vice versa, you know. So I mean,
it's
that's,
really like
that's the thing
yeah,
too. Is
I really prefer working in teams. Like it took me Zushido, I did by myself, and it took me like 5 years of like putting it away and getting it back out.
Well, and what's funny about Zushido is, I mean, last year at Unpub when you and I first met, you said, I got this crappy game that sucks. Do you want to try it? And we played it. And I was like, dude, this game is fantastic. Why aren't you doing anything with it? And then you were like, really? And then I kept asking you to play it over and over again because it was so fun. And then you started working on it again. And I haven't played it since Unpub. I can't wait to try it again to see what awesome. It's like now and to see the awesome cards and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It was super fun.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Anytime.
Yeah, and listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it, guys. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_design. Andy, you are...
@Andy_Lennox.
There you go. You can give us a call if you want. 770-TEL-BTG. Leave us a voicemail, and we'll play your recorded voicemails on the show. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Don't forget to watch Something from Nothing, the biweekly video broadcast that Jason and Chevy and TC do.
And don't forget to listen to 20 Minutes of Filler Podcast with me and Jason Gitarski.
That's right. It's a good show. And it's really short, too, so...
It's 20 minutes.
Approximately.
We quit before you're annoyed.
There you go. So, thanks again, Andy. Really, really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yep. And good night,
good
one
night,
and
everybody.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
But it's a Balzord. The Baltron is what it is. It's Baltron. The downside...
It's like a raspberry.